in the sort of Christian sense of, you know, rose from the dead and all that sort of stuff. It's also nasty, and lots of people just don't like it. You know, they grow up with this stuff, and somebody points out how horrible it is, and they read. If you read the ex-Muslim stuff, there's a drumbeat thing they keep saying: read the Quran, read the Quran. Look what it says. Mm. It's horrible.
I mean, the problem is for a lot of them, and this is, came on as a documentary about ex-Muslims. It's a hell of a wrench because you're not going to speak to your family again.
No, I know.
Ever. I mean, that's that.
Mm.
I mean, it's just...
Well, sooner or later, families are going to have to start being tolerant about it, as they were with atheism. I mean, atheism was like this in Christianity for a long time.
I remember when my grandmother found out I was an atheist. Not happy.
No.
Not happy at all.
No. You were a traitor.
Yeah. Yeah. Ooh, far worse than a traitor. Heathen.
Mm. Mm.
But, anyway. Yes, it was a lot easier. Not the sort of... Well, did we ever persecute atheists in this country? Probably in the same time we persecuted Protestants and Catholics and things like that, but
I think
basically yes, it wasn't a good career move to
no.
be an atheist.
Well, my father was a secret atheist because his job required him to be a Church of England observer, you know, the middle temple of the law profession. He was the master of the middle temple for a year, which is like an honorific title, meaning you're one of the big cheeses, you're one of the gang.
Yeah.
And if he'd said he was an atheist, it would have queered the pitch for him.
So yes, I wonder if I'd been a bit... I was once asked to join the Masons. And I said, well, sorry, I can't do that because I don't believe in a higher being. And that was that.
Well, I think some people just don't much care what's, in some cosmic sense, true. They're not bothered about it.
No.
But
no.
Well, you and I are both sort of people who are bothered about it. We may quarrel fiercely about what it is, but that's the reason we quarrel about it. That's the reason it gets so heated, because we all care about what's true.
Yeah.
And it's a bit of a minority pursuit. Most people's attitude is, oh, for goodness sake, grow up, you know, stop being such an adolescent.
Yes.
Get yourself a life and stop, you know, occasionally get drunk and mouth off in the pub if you really want to, but otherwise, you know, just get with it.
Who knows, maybe they're right.
Maybe.
Anyway, shall we do some trumpeting?
Hmm. Okay, is the machine switched
it
on?
It is actually. It's been recording for a couple of minutes. So I wanted to take your... because you were doing so well on the subject of Islam. Let's check that it is actually recording.
By the way,
yes,
feel
free
to publish that if you want to. I don't believe anyone's going to kill me for what I've said. And if they do, well, you've got to die of something. I'm getting to the age where I'm going to die of something rather painfully. I mean, it's a bit... It's sort of a martyr thing. It's not that I want to die, but then I'm going to die and I don't want that either, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
It's going to happen one way or another.
Mm. It's odd, actually, but Baha'i martyrs aren't that old. They tend to be Tommy Robinson's age rather than...
I mean, don't get me wrong, I'd far rather die peacefully in a bed. You know, I much prefer that.
Yeah.
And I'm working on the principle that if any Muslim is idiotic enough to threaten me in any way that's public, that he'll draw attention to my back catalogue, which I think is better than... I think it deserves to be better known than it is. Some people's back catalogue isn't as good as it is known as. I think mine's slightly better than it is thought of as.
I think it's considerably better, but that's my opinion.
I think at its best it's pretty good. Okay, well, Trump, shall we officially start?
Right, okay. It is Monday the 28th of May 2018. I am Patrick Crozier, and I am sitting in with Brian Micklethwaite in his living room, and we're going to talk about Donald Trump. I think we're going to divide this into two parts, but we always say we're going to structure this in a really professional manner, and it never quite happens like that. But the idea was it's going to be structured into how he won and how is he governing. So, Brian, how did he win?
Well, when you get an event as close as that election between him and Hillary Clinton, and it was very close, you're talking dozens of thousands of votes in a few constituencies, and the popular vote, as the Clinton people have never stopped pointing out, going the other way. The closer an event is, the more reasons there are for it to happen. If you've been in a really close cricket match, you'll think back on dozens of events in it where, if only that catch had been held, or, you know, that stupid run out hadn't happened, or something. And it's the same with really close elections. But I suppose one way of looking at it is to say, why is it that Trump got to the point where it was in effect a dead heat, that he was shrewd enough to win by putting in the effort in the bits that mattered when Hillary Clinton didn't, as opposed to being the complete no-hoper that his opponents thought he would be, to the point where I believe they actually arranged for him to win the nomination. I mean, they wanted him to win it.
Oh, goodness, I mean, I've always thought he won that. And this is why I put 20 quid on Trump very early on, is because I thought this guy is, I mean, he's ridiculous. He's Donald Trump, for starters. He's doing it all the wrong way. He's saying all the wrong things. And then he won, and he won very quickly. And he was up against all these professional Republican politicians with their machine, people who knew how to win elections, some of you think so. He didn't. He destroyed them so quickly within a few weeks. I mean, Jeb Bush, he destroyed him with two words.
Yes.
Low energy Jeb. Mm. And that was it. He was done for. And Jeb had all the money and all the experience. Didn't do him any good. And he was so crude and so rude and so coarse. And he thought, something's going on here. I don't know what it is, but he's got something. So my assumption was that it was through his own efforts that he got the Republican nomination.
Okay, first of all, you're right. I mean, we're now looking back to a big moment in the game. And what you said is definitely a reason why he won the election. No question. None at all.
Mm-hmm.
He had skills that the others didn't have. But it is also the case that the Democrats never realised. They still haven't worked out what hit them. They still don't know what hit them.
No,
they still
no.
They refuse to accept it.
No,
they keep. Sorry, this chair's creaky. I don't know whether that's good.
Well, I think our audience will live with it. No, it's the chair that is creaking.
It is. I don't like it. I agree with you. You're quite right. I mean, his tweeting was exceptional. But
were you following his tweetings before the election?
No, I wasn't, so I
don't know.
No, but it clearly was exceptional.
But when you say, I mean, I think this is an important point, that his opponents still don't know what happened and still don't accept it.
It was more that, I don't like this language, but sometimes it's essential. They refuse to accept what happened. This is a kind of truth they simply will not think about. They actively resist this truth. It's not a question of them trying to find the truth and just genuinely not being able to
work. Which truth are we talking about? The fact that
Trump is a much more formidable and impressive figure than they have always assumed him to be.
Yes.
He's both a better operator and a better man. A much more impressive figure. Potentially.
Let's talk about him as an operator. How does he go about it?
Well, one obvious thing to say about Trump is that he has enormous energy. He gets a lot of stuff done. I don't think all great people are like this, but I think a lot of them are. They simply get up earlier in the morning than the rest of us. They do more before breakfast than the rest of us.
So like Margaret Thatcher having five hours sleep a night.
Everything they do faster, and they keep on at it for longer. That's a very big part of the answer. Okay, there are millions of other people in the world like that. How come this particular person did so well? But that is part of it. Trump is a man of great energy. You know, you said that we were going to hop around from how he's governing to how he got elected. Well, just recently, there was a little episode that was being made much of by his supporters, and I think quite reasonably, when he was at some officer induction ceremony or something. A whole bunch of naval cadets were being made into officers, and he shook hands with every single one of them.
This is 1,042. Yes.
Cadets who became, I think, officers. I'm not sure what it was, but it was a big move in their careers. And he stayed and he shook hands with every single one of them.
And they're not going to forget it.
They're not. No. I mean, think of your hero. Supposing there's some sort of rock star or writer or, you know, somebody, if you're listening to this podcast, imagine somebody you really love and him taking the trouble to shake hands with you personally in a big crowd that you're part of.
Yes.
You don't forget it, as you say. No. You don't. And I think you can go back to his campaigning and suggest that he was probably doing the same thing in that. You know, he would hang around for another hour at the end of his meetings and just glad hand everybody, shake hands and say thanks for what you're doing. And don't forget, elections are won by people doing stuff, you know, going out and knocking on doors and all that stuff.
Well, yes, that's part of it, but it's also what they say. And of course, I couldn't believe some of the things that came out of his mouth during the campaign, but they didn't seem to do him any harm.
I think they
must be doing him some good.
Doing him some good, because I think, and lots of people have said this, including quite well-educated college professors and people like that who voted for Trump, that they wanted somebody to shake things up. They had the feeling that Washington was ruled by a one-party state that wasn't their party, and they wanted somebody to go in there and, you know, frighten the chickens.
Mm.
And therefore, what everybody else thought was bad, him saying something outrageous, you can imagine all those people thinking of voting for Trump going, yeah, well said, mate. I don't think I agree, but at least you got him thinking you're terrible. You got that smart-ass Romney or whoever, you know.
He was being judged by the enemies he was making. He was making the right enemies, yeah.
Making all the right enemies, right, yes. Yeah, yes. And media and all that, you know. So it's a feature, not a bug, that he was upsetting. Don't forget, you cannot understand Trump without thinking about the 2008 and all that, the financial turmoil. You're talking about a whole generation of people who've basically had to take a sort of 25% pay cut for the rest of their lives. And they just weren't seeing this being registered by the regular politicians.
And the way I see it is that there was a sort of unwritten contract between the politicians and the people, in that the people said, like, OK, you politicians, you can have your political correctness and your environmentalism and all that crap, but you've got to keep the money coming in.
That's it.
You've got to put a roof over our head and make things all right. And the politicians failed to keep their side of the bargain.
Yeah.
And so a lot of the people saying, well, I'm not keeping mine.
Yeah.
I've had enough of this crap.
Mm.
But it didn't come through in 2008 or 2012. Why has it taken so long?
Things do take a long time in politics, I think.
Yeah.
People, well, there was nobody to vote for, first of all.
Yes, that's true. Romney.
I mean, the Republicans were all besuited Washingtonians to a man, who were, in the eyes of Trump voters, the problem, not the solution. So maybe a black guy would stir things up, you know, freak out a few posh white Republican bastards, you know, having to deal with a black man.
I mean, do you think there's much of a crossover between Trump voters and Obama?
Well, there
voters?
Does seem to have been quite a lot of people who voted for Obama switching to Trump. Yes.
Really?
Yeah, quite a lot, yeah.
No,
yeah.
I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah. Which makes the whole thing about Trump voters all being racists preposterous. I mean, I'm quite prepared to believe some of them are, but a lot of them are not. And quite a few of them voted for Obama. Because he thought he was the least worst prospect for the working man, I guess, you know.
Mm.
Working stiffs.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think, what other things? Yes, I'll tell you another major way of talking about Trump that makes sense of all this, and that is to do with respect. One of my hobby horses, I've said it to you many times, I'm sure, because I say it to all my friends, is that an amazing amount of the trouble in the world is caused by men, and it is especially men, disagreeing in the wrong way about their relative importance. And Hillary Clinton got in on this with her famous deplorable remark, and the reason that was seized upon was that it seemed to speak to her general attitude. What the Trump people wanted was to be respected. I mean, that line in A Few Good Men where Jack Nicholson says, I don't want medals and I don't want money, but you've got to treat me with a bit of damned courtesy or something, you know, some line like that. Don't treat me as your skivvy.
Yes. Well, it doesn't say, at one point, Tom Cruise character says, do this. And he said, yes, but you'll have to ask nicely.
Yeah, well, Tom Cruise was... we're changing the subject now to, I think, a very good film. But Cruise was pushing the Nicholson character's buttons on purpose.
Right.
He was trying to get him to lose his temper by deliberately treating him badly. But back to Trump. I read something very interesting about Trump quite a while ago now. That apparently when he was a teenager, he used to go out into the road and have long conversations with construction workers.
Now, his father worked in the construction business, so
yes.
He would...
I don't know where... But apparently he was well known in the area where he lived whenever anybody was sort of digging up the road, or if there was a new house being built or some new pipes being laid or something, Trump would be out there just chatting with these guys. And this happened, this was 50, so, over so, so 50 he's
learning,
years ago.
He's learning about the business, but he's also but learning, he's learning about the men who do the business.
That's right. He's one of these guys, you know. And no, he understands these guys. His voters, in other words, he has been listening to them for a very, very long time indeed. And I'm sure that one of the reasons he was a successful property developer was that there would have been times in his property developing career when some skyscraper was in trouble. And he would come down to the site and say, listen, guys, I'm in trouble. I need you to help. And because he had come and had beer with them and done whatever you do with these guys to get to know them, they said, fair enough. You've treated us with respect. We'll do it.
Do we know anything much about his construction career?
Well, I don't.
Career?
I don't. No, I'm sure don't. We no. do, but
no,
I don't.
No, I don't either.
But I definitely remember that episode as very telling. And another episode, which is not mentioned very much, is apparently he went to some kind of military academy himself. He was a cadet. I forget what brand. I think, was he Navy? One of something in the armed forces. He went to a cadet's college.
Before or after his college? Because he went to Wharton College, didn't he?
I don't know. I know so little about the man. I think there's so much to him that you can have three or four different conversations about why Trump did so well and why he's doing so well, which cover completely different ground, because he just gets through so much. I come back to that thing about the amount of stuff he does. I'm just sort of mentally going through all the things I wanted to make sure I said, but one thing I particularly want to say is about his tweeting, which I have been following just recently. I think people misunderstand speed and thoughtlessness. They confuse the two. This is all part of the Democrat determination to fail to understand how formidable he is.
Are we talking Covfefe here? When he introduced the word Covfefe to the word. But he meant to write coffee, I think.
Well, what I want to say is that tweeting is, again, I come back to a cricket analogy. Apologies, it's an obsession of mine. But when a batsman plays a shot in cricket, it's all over in a fraction of a second. But that doesn't mean that there's no skill gone into it. Quite the opposite. And his tweeting should be thought of as like a sporting shot. I believe he was a baseball jock when he was a kid.
Yeah?
Yes. So think of him as a baseball player taking a whack at the ball and learning how to do it. That his tweeting is a bit like that, I think. He's learned a way of doing it which seems to work, which seems to get up a good score.
Do we know anything about what the technique is? I mean, because you read this stuff, and I'm still astonished that the way he tweets and some of the things he says.
Well, I tell
and the
you,
combativeness
I tell
of
you,
the man.
One of these days, he is going to do a tweet, or he's going to hold a ceremony or something. He's going to do something in favour of apple pie. He's going to attend an apple pie convention, and he's going to be for apple pie. And he's going to get the whole Democrat Party being against apple pie. That's what's going to happen.
Well, we're talking about the other week when he was against MS-13's gang.
And
the Democrats decided they were going to be in favour of
it. They were in favour of it. And he's got them supporting Hamas. They are unhinged.
Yeah. I'm rather proud of the fact, very shortly after he got elected, I wrote a piece on Samosata saying, never interfere with your enemy when he's making a mistake. Because my feeling was that they were making so many mistakes and making fools of themselves on an almost daily basis. It'd be unsporting to tell them that they were doing this.
Except that you could tell them 100 times and it wouldn't make any difference. They are in such a state of self-induced mania that... nothing. They remind me of the people who supported the British Empire when it was in the process of being closed down. I mean, they were just completely unhinged.
Oh, well, tell me about that. This is before my time.
One of the very earliest recollections I have of British politics were people called Empire Loyalists. And, you know, they were just insane. I don't know what they thought they were accomplishing. Were they going to re-establish the British Empire somehow? Were they going to reverse... You see, it's one thing to regret that colonies have been liberated or something. quite another to propose that they should be reconquered. But they never made it clear what they were trying to accomplish. I mean, being in favour of the British Empire wasn't a policy, it was just a regret. And yet, if you tried to explain any of this to them, they just went crazy.
And I wonder if it's because... I mean, this is off the top of my head. It's because their world was... And this feeds into what's happening to the Democrats. It's their world's falling apart.
Yes.
The whole world has been
right.
predicated
right.
on this empire existing.
Mm.
And it's been taken away, and maybe that's with the Democrats. Their world is predicated on environmentalism, on political correctness, on the state doing this, that, and the other, and mass migration. And Trump is just saying, no, don't fancy that. I'm going to remove that, stop it. And I wonder if that's also the reason why a lot of Remainers, not all, but a lot of them, seem to me to be completely nuts. Their world is just collapsing.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter how much you say, well, actually, you know, there's nothing that can be done in Brussels that can't be done in London. Mm. You know, you can still argue for these things, but no, they won't have it. It's
yes. Well, I was thinking of Remainers when I said that about empire loyalists, because again, there's another empire they're desperately loyal to, and as you say, it's collapsing, which is why you could have explained in great detail to Democrats why they're making mistakes, and it still wouldn't get through to them. I suppose there are a few who are beginning to grasp it now. There are some elections coming up, I believe, which could mean the Democrats could do spectacularly badly, by which I mean rather badly instead of really well.
Until last week they were going to win a lot, win big, win bigly even. But the polls are going against them. And of course the polls themselves are probably wrong in Democrat favour, so it could be a disaster for them.
Mm. At that point, I think you might start seeing some intelligence on the Democrat side.
Well, I wonder. I remember the 80s very, very well, and you think how long it took for the Labour Party to show some intelligence. I mean, you know, the whole period of 79, it was the moment to me where the penny dropped was in 85. It was after it was Neil Kinnock's speech to Labour Party conference, which I think he's probably forgotten these days, but he really took on the militant tendency.
Yes.
And he had a fantastic speech.
And that
was the moment things started, you know, they thought, no, it's not so much they pulled back from the brink, they'd gone over the brink.
Mm.
and they'd fallen into the floor of the canyon. But then they started, yes, we are at the bottom of a canyon. You know, we've got a reverse direction now.
Yeah.
So and they did. But that took 6 years.
Well, you were asking, we were talking a moment ago about how the reaction to the 2008 calamities, I mean, whatever you think of the causes of them, you know, Austrian economics and all that, and fiat currency, blah, blah. The fact is that for a lot of people, that was when it all blew up in everyone's faces. And yet it took about 8 years for anything very obvious to happen as a result. It people take time.
Well, it was the Tea Party, wasn't it? That was post-crisis, if I remember correctly.
Mm.
So was that. And that may have sort of percolated through.
Yes, the Tea Party probably did a lot of Trump... probably brought a lot of Trumpists together. It'd be interesting to know. It illustrates the point that demonstrations which apparently fail do have consequences. So all these Remain demonstrations will have results, unfortunately. Yeah. I wish they didn't, but they will.
Well, did the Empire Loyalists, did their efforts make any difference?
That's a good point. I can't think of the slightest thing they've accomplished. No, you're right. They didn't achieve anything, I don't think.
We're getting distracted, and that's okay. We will get distracted. But shall we go back to Trump winning the election and how he did it?
Mm.
Because we've got past him going for the nomination, getting the nomination, but then the campaign against Hillary herself. How did that go?
I can remember writing a piece about whether Trump was destroying Hillary Clinton. This was during the campaign. My sense is that the big events were the Trump rallies.
Yeah.
that's where the real work went into it. Whereas Hillary Clinton's rallies were nothing by comparison. they were dismal events.
18 people or something like that, and they were all some Democrat employees or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, and I mean, they were all faking the photos of all the vast numbers of people there. You know, if you pull back the original uncropped version, it's just the little group in the middle.
You know, I'm a bit confused by this. Let's do some maths. I mean, about the maximum number of people you can get into an auditorium is 5,000, maybe? Let's call it 10,000. So, you know, I'll come to think of it, maybe you get 30,000 into a stadium. And you can do that, say, 50 times an election campaign? Well, it's over a million, but you need the votes of what? 60-odd million
but
people to win?
I think the point to remember is that the people at those rallies are also, every evening, when they're not going to those rallies, they're doing the social media stuff and the knocking on the doors and the pamphleteerings and the putting up all mm-hmm. all the old-fashioned politics that I personally find wearisome. But if you want to do politics, this is what it all consists of. And when you have a rally, you're not just getting somebody to vote for you, you're getting somebody to work for you harder than he would have done otherwise.
Yeah.
Or she, of course. Mm. That's the whole argument. Hillary Clinton, she didn't produce any arguments that I can remember. Her only argument was you've got to vote for a woman. And if you're a woman, you must vote for a woman, otherwise you're letting the side down.
Yeah.
Which is a very bad argument, I think.
It was very much more of the same.
Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't. Yeah. No hope and change
there. He called
her
Crooked Hillary, didn't he?
He did. And she called him dark. Yes. We're going to a dark place. Mm. I mean, Scott Adams, who's... Now, Scott Adams is another one. He predicted it. He's a very bright chap. I don't understand what he says, but I feel like I ought to listen and try to make an effort to understand in case he... Because there's probably something there.
I've been following him for a long time. I don't always agree with him, time and again he strikes me as believing in something akin to magic, believing that some fundamental disagreement between two nation states, for example, can be wished away with some sort of flummery about it's all in the mind or something like that. No, that doesn't make... I read that and I think, what do you know about this? Nothing. You just don't know how many... disagreements are going on. But when it comes to bodging up agreements, that can happen, even between absolutely opposed parties.
Sorry, so you mean... Oh, I see, yes. Also like the Good Friday Agreement in Northern Ireland. I mean, that was a...
All sorts of bodges can occur.
Has it got anything... I mean, well, got us on to Scott Adams because he wanted to talk
well,
about...
Well, it goes to Scott Adams and whether he talks sense... a lot of the time, yeah. But I get the impression he does talk a lot of sense. Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, he thought Hillary Clinton using the word dark was very good. He liked that a lot.
Yeah.
And it seemed to me that Hillary Clinton did a lot better against Trump than anyone else.
Right.
And it was a close election. I did not think it was going to be close.
Ah.
No, I thought Trump was going to win by a mile simply because how he crushed the Republican. His Republican opponents. Of course, if you're right in saying that actually the media helped him because they thought this
well,
was
I think
laugh.
They helped him in the very early stages when they thought he would be the least formidable opponent. I'm sure they helped him, and I think they felt guilty about it afterwards. That's all part of how unhinged they are now.
Mm.
They gave him acres of free publicity. He spent far less money than Hillary Clinton, I believe.
Yeah.
And he's a genius at getting attention.
Yes.
Another whole episode in his life is the whole reality TV era.
The Apprentice and all that.
Yeah, all that stuff. I didn't see any of it. I think I saw one fight, literally a fight, between Trump and somebody or other next to a boxing match. And this was regarded as evidence that the man was uncouth to the point of unspeakable ghastliness. And therefore, nobody could possibly vote for him. That, I think, is all part of why the Democrats underestimated him. You know,
no, I think whereas, it was. I mean, it's WWE, isn't it?
Yeah,
I think it was a wrestling, and yeah, these things are
exactly.
If you've never seen them, listener,
exactly.
they are quite something. They are.
You're missing the point if you think it's all deadly serious.
Yes.
There's a definite tongue-in-cheek meet up in the bar afterwards feeling to the whole thing. I think that's all part of. of Trump getting us and our lives and the other bastards not getting us and our lives, I'm guessing, because it's not my life either. But what are the other things I was determined to say? I think I've covered most of the little points I wanted to make. I think that the way that Trump uses tweeting, and now we're getting on to the question of how he's president, a very big question when he won the election was, would he turn over a new leaf and become a proper, decent president? And I thought, please don't. You know, please carry on annoying these people, you know. God bless him, he didn't. Thank goodness. I thought it was a distinct possibility he would completely dump all his supporters and just be a regular bastard.
As far as I can figure out, he has pretty much kept all his promises, as far as he can. Mm. He introduced some sort of Muslim ban the first day or second day
he was
president.
He's still doing it. I mean, I read a piece just now about how this week's kept promises. I forget what they were, but he was keeping them. That's the point. And I think this goes to the... And actually, this is another point I want to emphasise, which is this whole idea that we now live in a world where the rulers of the West, of what used to be called Christendom, are now all on first name terms with each other. They form a single class. Plutocrats, not of the world, but of the West, unite, be their slogan. And they sort of, you know, they marry each other and they go to Harvard. Their children all go to these Harvard or Oxbridge or somewhere. The universities have ceased to be local things and have become sort of global finishing schools for the elite. And I think this was all part of what Trumpians were voting against. And one of the central ideas of this elite is that the promises we make to the electorate, they're just campaign promises. The promises that matter are the promises we make to each other.
Yes.
And Trump clearly doesn't go with that. He's making a point of keeping his campaign promises. And you can see all the Democrats and the Republicrats, or the Demo, whatever we call them, all standing around going, God, doesn't this man know anything? Does he really think that campaign promises are things you're supposed to keep? How utterly jejune and ridiculous that is.
Yes.
But again, it's why they love him and why they are liable to lose their next bunch of elections.
Yeah.
And he is quite consciously turning his back on a world in which, you know, Angela Merkel and the Home Secretary of Poland and the Professor of Philosophy at Prague are all on your email list of friends and so on, but not some tractor driver next door to you who voted for you. Fuck him.
Yeah.
That world is what Trump is pushing back against. And I think, again, it explains a lot of his success. And I also think that I was saying that Christendom has been united. I think that it's post-1990, and I would include myself in this criticism as one of the people who got this wrong. I used to talk then about the whole world becoming united, the elite of the world. I think that's wrong. I don't think it was the elite of the world. I think it was an illusion on the part of the elite of the West that they'd be able to pull in all the others. You know, that the Putins and Chinese bosses all these characters would be sucked into this great big club of happy rulers and all would be sweetness and light. And if you were opposed to that, you were in favour of war. And I think that's another thing that Trumpians are probably voting against. This sentimental illusion that conflicts between civilizations, between China, Russia, Islam, all these things are just the past. A man who deserves to be remembered better is Samuel Huntington, who wrote his book The
Conflict of Civilizations.
Yes.
Clash of Civilizations.
Was it that? Anyway, that was
no,
the
I
phrase.
Haven't read it,
that really. Was the phrase. Mm. Now, he was vilified because he was accused of wanting a clash of civilizations. Again, pathetic accusation. Yes. He was warning against it. He was saying, no, this is what the world's going to be. And I think that is profoundly true. And I think Trumpians worked that out quicker than that elite did. I mean, Hillary, all this bollocks about Russia, it's pure projection. The Clintons were absolutely up to their necks in Russian skullduggery, you know, buying and sort of
projection. That's projecting your faults onto others.
Yes,
because yes right. My fault is that I, you know, conspire with the Russians. Therefore, he must be conspiring with the Russians. That sort of thing.
We'll accuse him of it because it's what we feel bad about having done ourselves. And they were doing that on a colossal scale, and China as well, and the whole Clinton system seems to me to be rooted, the more I think about this, the more I think this is true, rooted in a great big illusion of universal agreement about what the point of the world is and the point of humanity is. The denial of civilizational differences in the world.
Yes, yes. There seems
and
quite
I think
a lot
Trumpians sense that that's bollocks.
Yes.
And when Trump...
And it is bollocks.
It is. Oh, yeah. I think it is bollocks. Yes. I mean, there are plenty of... All right, there are plenty of liberal Democrats in Cairo, but there are a hell of a lot more other things.
Yes.
You know? It's an illusion. It's a comforting illusion. Because the West was so preeminent for a little while, it was possible. And I think, in retrospect, that the Russians and the Chinese... were very careful to feed these illusions, but they never fell victims of them themselves. Never.
No.
And that's the sense in which people who often tell me the Cold War never ended are right. I think it's very important that Soviet communism was toppled.
It felt wonderful at the time.
Well, I think ideologies...
What is remarkable...
I think ideologies matter. Therefore, when a really evil one gets smashed, I think that's really good news.
Yeah.
And I'm quite happy to call that the end of the Cold War. But if by the end of the Cold War you mean closing down the KGB instead of it being called something else, clearly that didn't happen. It carried on.
Okay. We're getting distracted. But let's get distracted for a couple of minutes. But I'm just interested by the fact that Russia stayed as Russia. I mean it seems to me to be much more recognisably czarist than it is Soviet.
Absolutely. But the reason we're not changing the subject from Trump is that I think Trump kind of gets all this.
Yeah.
His talk about China taking our jobs, the feeling these fellas are not on our side. They're on their own side, and they're certainly not on your side. You combine harvester operator from Illinois, vote for me, make America great again. You know, that's why I mention this. It's not just that we've changed the subject to something else interesting. I think we're talking about something that still... the Democrats have a real problem understanding.
Right, well, we've got through how he got elected. We also seem to have got through how he's governing. We can talk about the whole FBI-Russia collusion stuff.
Do we have to? It's just such bollocks.
It is bollocks. Well, yes, the claim is bollocks that he was colluding with the Russians. What is interesting?
Well, he may have been. I want to believe he was, actually. I like the idea that the Russians were deluded into supporting him. Now imagine how they feel. I think that would be superb. It really would. Because it would all be part of his genius at getting his opponents to pay his bills, his propaganda bills, you know, do his work for him. It's all part of it.
Yeah. But it's all part of it. Well, I think what's interesting is how the FBI and CIA are being dragged into this, and they are not looking good one little bit.
I get the feeling it's the Obama leadership of the FBI and CIA rather than the institutions themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I get the feeling, I may be imagining it, but that the sort of average desk officer in these places, I mean, I know nothing about this world, so, you know, half reading Jean Le Carré is about the limit of my knowledge of it all.
Yes.
But I get the feeling that the political appointees put at the top by a succession of people, especially this character Brennan, who was a straight Bolshevik as far as I can tell. What the fuck he's doing at the top of the CIA, I will never know. He gave a talk on British TV, which is when I first realised he was a wrong'un, because why is he giving this talk? It was a very anti-Trump talk, and I looked him up after that. I mean, it was just outrageous that such a man wasn't a junior professor in an obscure college rather than a CIA boss. And he was talking about Trump's unsuitability for everything he was trying to be. The one thing I do want to say about Trump, and do you want to say something about the FBI thing? CIA?
Well, it's only that it's interesting how they've been sort of co-opted into the Democrat Party and the mainstream media.
Mm.
And the length of this battle, oh, it's been grinding on for almost a year and a half now. And I wonder when it's going to come to its conclusion. I mean, my assumption with Trump is because he's such a winner, he'll win this one. And he's going to take a lot of people down.
Mm.
But I so want to see it.
my sense is that he's keeping it going.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he thinks it's to the disadvantage of his opponents for this to go on dominating the news.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they are the party of overthrowing the illegitimately elected president now by unfair methods. That's their only... I mean, that's how they are presenting themselves to the American electorate. It's all part of why they could lose this bunch of elections that are coming up. And Trump's letting them just... Our friend Tim Evans talks about killing grounds. In propaganda terms, I think the whole Russia thing is a killing ground. And the last thing Trump wants to do is close it down.
Hmm. Goodness, they are making some extraordinary mistakes in that case, if that's true. As you said earlier, they're
simply
not learning.
I mean, I agree with you. My feeling about Trump is he's 20 times cleverer than I'll ever be. I don't regard him as being stupider than me or not anything at all.
No.
He's far cleverer than me. I've always thought that about all presidents of the United States, but never more so than with Trump. These people who say the reason why the president has just done something I think is stupid is that the president is stupid strike me as utterly stupid themselves. I mean, whatever else the president of the United States is, he's clearly got some smarts about him. Otherwise, he wouldn't be that. And that applies to Obama and, you know, all of them. Oh.
Yes, let's make the case. It does even apply to Obama.
Oh, certainly applies to Obama. I mean, it's a digression, but he saw that he could become president in a way that very few others could have seen it. He saw a path to the White House that not many others could see. And in particular, he saw a way past the Clintons.
Yes.
Which, not many people would take them on.
No.
Thrash them, which he did. Something to say about the way that Trump governs. It's being denounced as chaotic and crazy.
Well, I can see why. An awful lot of people have entered the White House and left.
Mm-hmm.
Sean Spicer.
Well, I'll tell you what I think about that. When I was a kid, I used to read books by a man called Peter Drucker, who is an Austrian who emigrated to America I think the 30s he was there. He 20s and 30s, he kind of did consultation work for General Motors and things like that. And he wrote a string of books about management theory and all that. And one of his big dictums was that the purpose of an organisation is not to be smoothly run, it is to get good results. And the way you get good results is you make good decisions. And the way you make good decisions is you have a bloody great argument about what the decision ought to be so that you cover the ground. And I remember one particular anecdote that Drucker mentioned, that apparently George Washington, whenever he had a big decision to make, he would leak it in the strictest confidence to two people. I think they were Jefferson and Madison, a couple of those big name founder type people. And apparently they hated each other, these two. And that meant that both sides of the argument, at least, would be covered. And there would be a big ruckus about what ought to be done, and Washington would listen, and he would then make his decision. And an updated version of the same anecdote...
Well, key question is, was George Washington a good president?
Well, it certainly seemed to work.
Right.
He did make quite good decisions. And then an updated version of the same anecdote, Alfred P. Sloan Jr., the man who created General Motors out of a great big slew of disparate motor car companies, once apparently, this may be apocryphal, but the story goes that he arrived at a meeting one day with all his top brass, and he said, "Well, gentlemen, I take it we're all agreed about this decision." "Yes, sir, yes, sir, we're all agreed." "Well, then I propose we postpone this decision until we can develop some disagreements about it." The point being, that good decisions are not made by unanimous groups of yes men. They're made by people arguing the toss, and sometimes getting angry about it. If the price you pay is a bit of heat along with the light, well, that's a very, very small price to pay for the light that you get. And that the really dangerous thing is to have unanimity.
I'm trying to think of examples of things I know, management decisions I know. One would be the First World War on the Western Front. Did people go around disagreeing with Douglas Haig? No, they didn't.
Well, the most recent one, I hadn't thought of it in these terms, but the Darkest Hour movie, which is a blow-by-blow account of the ferocious debate between Winston Churchill and Lord Halifax, at the end of which it was thoroughly understood what we were doing, and the risks of what we were doing were thoroughly understood, and the nature of the guess we were making about the world was thoroughly understood, and would therefore percolate through the organisation. Yeah, we couldn't take the chance with Hitler. We don't know how he would have behaved if we'd made a deal with him. Would we have been rolled up? We don't know. We weren't prepared. You know, the way that you have a big row, and on the face of it, that is the most insane possible thing to be doing at the moment of crisis. But the result is not only the right decision, or at any rate a reasonable decision, but a reasonable decision which everybody, including those who lost, understood. Another example of this is the preliminaries to the Battle of Lepanto, when the Western navies, which were a bit of an assemblage of odds and sods, you know, not all taking their orders from the same person. Apparently, the night before the battle, they had a blazing row amongst themselves about what their tactics ought to be. But on the day, they all understood what had been decided, much better because of that row.
I could be wrong on this, but my understanding is that before Trafalgar, actually, Nelson just told them what to do. This is what, I mean, it was a very bold Nelsonian strategy, but that's how he did it. There were huge rows in the Second World War between Churchill and Allenbrooke. I mean, it is Dorrit every night. He's going around to Churchill's. Churchill's got some madcap scheme, and Allenbrooke has to talk him out of it. And he keeps going to 1, 2 in the morning. And you can feel as you read his diary how tired he's getting for all this stuff. But it had to be done.
Maybe what I'm saying is that one way to run a bad government is to be perpetually quarrelling. But the mere fact of quarrelling doesn't prove it's a bad government.
Are they quarrelling? I mean, they're getting fired, but are they quarrelling? Do we know that?
I don't know.
No, I don't know that either.
Well, they're not willing to do what's wanted, or Trump doesn't think they're the right people to do it, or something.
I mean, I guess it feels to me that he's trying to find who's the right person for that job right now. It's a more...
And I think the point about him working fast is very relevant. I think Trump works fast. And therefore, he looks at somebody. We appointed him a week ago, didn't we? Is he doing what we want? No, I don't think he is. Right, well, fine. You know, boom, boom, boom. No messing.
Oh, I will give an example of this sort of firing business. I'm a supporter of Watford Football Club. Now, since the Italians took over about 5 or 6 years ago, they have sacked a huge number of managers.
Yes.
2 points. One, it has not done Watford a great deal of harm because they've gone from the second division to the first division. And secondly, it hasn't done the managers a great deal of harm either. Almost all of them are still in the business. So maybe... actually, all this idea of loyalty that we tend to think of is rather misplaced. Actually, you're usually better off, you know, getting someone in to do a job, and then as soon as the job is done, you know, say thank you very much.
There's something a bit military about it. I mean, it suggests to me a link back to those days in the military academy that Trump attended. That the military people in the thick of battle are constantly saying, you're fired, you are in command, get on with it.
Well, the number of sackings, certainly of officers in the British Army in the First World War is extraordinary, considering that there weren't that many people to replace them. Officers were in very short supply. But, you know, if you're a Brigadier General and there were doubts about you, off you go.
Well, the point I'm making is that just the purpose of an organisation, the purpose of the White House, is not to be a nice, easy place to work.
No, it's to get results.
It's to get results.
Yes.
And if you can't make that distinction, you're not making sense.
How are we doing in terms of actual results? It seems everything is still progressing.
economics, in the right direction. On the economics front, there is universal, almost universal agreement in among American workers that life is getting better in a way.
Well,
that
I think that's
done.
Really dangerous stuff, because if I'm right,
us
Austrians are right, then there will be a collapse at some point. So
I think it's conceivable that the debt may even be reduced and the seriously right things may start getting done.
I mean, reduced by fiat or reduced by actually being paid off? I mean, they've got a huge deficit at the moment, so they'll have to get rid do that first.
Mm. Well, I think there may be some advances on that front. I don't know. But I think that from the point of view of the standard of living of working people, I don't think the macroeconomic position has changed much, but I think the microeconomics of being an American worker have improved.
Mm-hmm.
Now, your feeling might be, oh, he's buying votes. Is that what you're saying?
No, I don't think he is. I think he's in a real bind.
I mean, tax cuts and deregulation. Tax cuts don't reduce the amount of income the government gets. I've long believed that.
Mm-hmm.
See, America's hit the Laffer curve ceiling, I think. I think that's the crucial fact about the American government. I think this is one of the reasons why Trump exists. Whereas a generation ago, you could increase public spending in one area and nobody else would suffer that much. Just be from 29% up to 29.5%.
The point is that the whole cake would still continue growing.
But now it's got to the point where if you increase taxes, overall production goes down and the total amount of take, if you increase the percentage of taxes, the total amount of tax you get your hands on doesn't change, which means that if you reduce taxes, the percentage, it also doesn't change, because the people work harder and a lower percentage of more activity gives you the same amount of money. Again, Trump reminds me very much of Thatcher in this respect. The Thatcher moment in British politics was when the state had arrived at the point where it couldn't just go on getting bigger. And I think the American state seems to have reached that point quite recently.
Yeah.
That's the feeling I get. In terms of results, that is the big result.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
As for things like North Korea and Iran and all that, I think everything's still to play for. But at least it's possible to be optimistic. Whereas with Obama, it was quite clear his purpose was to reduce American clout. That's what he was trying to do. He thought that was the right thing to do.
But there's also appeasement, of course. He was appeasing
North
Koreans.
He was.
You can just withdraw without appeasing anyone.
He was in favour of it. Yeah. He was in favour of diminishing American influence around the world.
Well, my theory on Obama was that he was and is a communist, and he was trying to turn, as best he could, America into a communist country.
I think he's partly a communist, but he's partly a huckster. He's partly somebody who just wants a good personal life for himself. And, you know, he's very good at that. He's a Chicago machinist, among other things. A communist is to misunderstand how much he's going to do personally out of it all. And he's doing very, very well.
There seem to be a lot of communists. I can't think of any off the top of my head, but there seem to be a lot of communists who've done very well over the years. Personally,
yeah.
I understand Maduro's daughter is very rich.
Yeah.
Was it Chavez's daughter? I can't remember.
There was something else I wanted to say. I can't remember what it was. It'll come to me, maybe. But in general, I think that Trump is a man about whom so much can be said that we're going to be spending the next month. Oh, I wish I'd said that. That's going to happen to both of us, I'm sure.
Well, we could talk about the Kanye West business.
Well,
he's big buddies with Kanye West. So you thought, how did that happen?
Well, if I was in mixed company, I'd be hesitant about saying this, but I think Clinton.
Well, it's been recorded.
Bill Clinton. Or I don't mind. I'll give it a go. You can take yourself too seriously. Bill Clinton has in common with Trump that he puts it about, shall we say.
Oh, I see.
And that's I think right. There's a certain kind of black man who rather likes that and thinks, good on you, man.
I was rather hoping the answer would be that actually blacks are rather fed up of being on this Democrat reserve.
Yeah.
They are beginning to realise that actually they're not getting anywhere by voting Democrat. And as Trump did say, where's he got you? And maybe...
I'm convinced that the claim that Trump is a racist is absolutely bollocks. I'm sure he's not.
Mm-hmm.
I can't prove it. I don't have chapter and verse, but I'm damn sure he's had.
Well, it all depends on what sort of racist we're talking about.
I'm betting that in among those conversations with construction workers that he's had over the years, there've been a lot of black guys, a lot of people from all over the racial spectrum, and he knows a hell of a lot more about how your typical American black guy talks and thinks than you or I do, or than Hillary Clinton does.
Well,
possibly.
Indeed. Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Kanye West is married into the
Kardashian family.
There's a whole sort of tribe of people who are sort of Las Vegas types. They're sort of down market vulgarians, reality TV, and what they are not is racist. This is a game everyone can play. Trump's part of that, I think. I'm sure that I'm sure lots of black Americans watch all that and think, oh, I wish we could have some of that, you know, good on them. And Kanye West, I think, one of the things Kanye West said was, I don't always agree with Trump, but I love the guy, you know. It's a personal thing with him. And that's all mixed up with the where's it got
it's,
you.
It's the lack, it, you think it's that a lot of this is to do with class, it's to do with
Style
and snobbery and things like that.
Yeah, it is. I think a very shrewd thing that was once said about Trump in something I read is that he grew up, he was a 15-year-old at the time when the Rat Pack were in their pomp.
That's this is Dean Martin and Frank Sinatra.
And crucially, Sammy Davis Jr.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah.
And the whole point of that Rat Pack style was that anyone could join in. Dean Martin, you know, the definite air of Hispanic about him. You didn't have to be anything in particular. You just had to have the right attitude and stay up all night and drink and shag the birds. That was it. And, you were an equal opportunity reveler, or whatever you'd call it. And I think that's right. And I also think it communicates the what you might call the pre-left wing vintage that Trump comes from. In many ways, he's sociologically a throwback to a late 50s pre-Beatles, pre-hippie era. He's like a geological stratum that's just been... And I think that's all part of why the Democrats are just absolutely incoherent with rage. They thought they'd seen these people off 30 years ago, and now one of them's back.
Which people have got rid of 30 years ago?
Well, the whole Frank Sinatra, pre-Beatles generation of short back and sides, get drunk and have a good time. Crooners, not rock and roll. The style I'm talking about, the pre-Beatles style of Dean Martin and Frank Sinatra.
Presumably the Democrats are dislike people because of their politics, not their...
The current Democrats regard their glory days as the late 60s.
Yes.
And my point is, Trump dates from the group of people that the whole idea of the late 60s was to expunge from everybody's memory.
Were they really against the Rat Pack as well as...
Well, in the sense that the Rat Pack was the Rat Pack and now we're us. You know, a succession of moments in the limelight. And now here's this guy from the Neolithic era suddenly back in the White House. It's just not right. We thought the last of them was Jack Kennedy. And now it turns out that they've got one of them. And of course, Ronald Reagan there was a touch of that about him as well.
There was?
A little bit.
Well, Reagan was never caught.
But Trump was not a member of the Rat Pack, but he was a fan of the Rat Pack. That's the point. And his whole style, his whole way of dressing, is of that vintage. And I think that makes sense. And I think that's why the present generation of Democrats simply cannot stand him on taste grounds, on aesthetic grounds.
No.
Never mind opinions.
I have difficulty, but that's another matter.
Well, my attitude is very simple. I don't have to live with the guy. I don't have to work with him. Yeah. I don't have to meet him. If I did meet him, it wouldn't last long, and I probably found it very interesting. I'm not picking a father-in-law, for God's sake.
No.
I'm just very glad he's the President of the United States.
It's interesting how, I think with both of us, he has convinced us as time has gone on Yes. So I think
I didn't think he'd be nearly as libertarian as he has been. I mean, on economic policies, he's 2 for 3 so far, and it could be more than that.
I mean, there's the taxation, but there's also the regulation,
deregulation, and protectionism. And of the three, it seems to me that protectionism is at least as much to do with getting other people to get rid of their protectionism as it is to erect protectionism around America. Mm. Now, it could be that will be the result, in which case I will say, well, that's a cross, you know, in the list.
I suspect...
But already there have been two ticks.
Taxation. I suspect international trade is a lot less important than domestic policy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's two more good things than I expected him to do.
Me too.
Speaking as a libertarian. I think as a libertarian it's far more problematic, as they say, to be in favour of this global assertiveness in places in, like, matters to do with Korea and to do with the Middle East, but I think that's a real dilemma for people who, broadly speaking...
Well, I'd like to think that the South Koreans weren't going to get nuked.
I'd like
them to live in peace and security.
Mm.
The Japanese too. And same with the Israelis.
Mm.
And I think Iran is a fairly clear threat to them.
Mm.
So... scaring these people seems to be a good idea, and especially Iran's case, of course, their whole ideology says, well, you know, become martyrs, you go to heaven, so there's no harm in using nuclear weapons now, is there?
Death to America. I think on foreign policy, a thing worth saying is that if you are wielding nuclear weapons, there is a certain advantage to be gained from seeming to be irrational and crazy, because it puts the fear of God into your enemies, quite simply. They tread carefully in your vicinity. They worry about your feelings, because one day your feelings might go pop and flatten them. And I think there's a sense in which the ownership of nuclear weapons makes you mad. Because if you are completely sane, what sort of threat have you got? Because you've got to be mad to threaten people with these things. You've got to be crazy. And Trump, I think...
It's more that if it's going to come back at you.
Well, if you've got weapons, you have to be willing to... There have to be circumstances in which you would use them.
Yes.
And using them is just mad. I mean, it's crackers. You've lost as soon as you push the button. Anything you believed in is gone.
I mean... If you nuke North Korea, who's going to notice? A few South Koreans, yes, and not much else.
I still think it's a step into the unknown. And I stand by it that nuclear weapons cause people often to pretend to be crazier than they are. I include in this Mao Zedong, Kim Jong-il and his ancestors, and the Iranians. I think they've all traded on this, we're crazy people. We don't care. We don't mind how many of our own people die. Sort of atmosphere. When in fact they are not as crazy as that. They are crazy in their axioms, in their basic intentions towards the world, but they're much more rational in going about it than they like to suggest sometimes. And I think Trump is a bit like that. I think Reagan did the same trick when, you remember that off-microphone remark, right, nuke Russia?
Yeah.
Drove the Russians absolutely mad with fear. What is going to happen next? I think one of the reasons that the Cold War ended so precipitately was the Russians got scared. I really think so. Because
Reagan... What were they scared of? I mean, the point was then we had... So it wasn't quite mutually assured destruction, but if America did start bombing Russia, Russia could bomb America.
Yeah, I know, so, but it wouldn't be good for Russia.
It wouldn't be good for Russia, yes.
And the point, the point was Reagan's casual remark, which sent the Western left into paroxysm, served a purpose. And, I mean, that's the horrifying thing about nuclear weapons. Well, there are many horrifying things about them, but one of them is that if you aren't prepared to sort of be a bit crazy, they become rather useless things.
Mm,
and, yes. And Trump's tweeting about how I've got bigger rockets than you or something, that was classic psycho.
He said he had a bigger button. Well, it's not really the button that matters, is it?
Yeah, I know, I know. Well, that's another thing, of course, that Trump has perfected the art of making slightly inaccurate tweets, which calls the Democrats to... They just can't help themselves. they say things like, it's not the button, is it? No. And they end up looking like pedantic idiots.
Yes, yes. As I have just now, yes.
Yeah, well, no, you're just having a laugh, but they mean it. They get all professor of English about
yes,
it.
Yes, yes,
and they exacerbate the class distinctions between them. The guy in the pub gets it completely, but the professor of linguistics goes all silly about it. And thereby, you know, if he just shouted, vote Republican, he couldn't have done a better job, you know.
Well, yes. I mean, we this is completely off topic, so we ought to talk sometime about how academics have gone mad. I'm sure they weren't this mad when I was at university.
I suspect it may be partly social media, that social media seems to bring the worst out of the stupidest and most dangerous people. And also, I suspect that I inhabit a very particular part of the social media. I am pretty sure that there's a group of people within my little bit of the internet that spends its life trying to find the stupidest thing said by a leftist yesterday.
Yes.
You know, in a population of 250 million Americans, or whatever the hell it is, some number like that, you're going to get some pretty psychotic things said on Twitter. And there's a certain kind of anti-lefty who spends his whole time chasing down the stupidest thing anyone said, and then saying, oh, did you see what he said? And they make it seem that the whole world's gone absolutely insane, whereas in fact it's more a case of them having gone a bit insane, actually.
Yes, okay. It's not the average, it's the extremes.
There was a very interesting contretemps about, are American universities a threat to free speech? Somebody sent a questionnaire around to all the college administrators or something in America, and they all said the same thing. They all said, well, it's not a problem at our college, but I'm sure it's a problem generally. In other words, they got an impression that the other universities were far crazier than they were.
Although,
now, that could be they're just deluding themselves. That could be it. But it could be that they are looking at their own university in its entirety and they're seeing a few crazy leftists and a lot of good people. But they are only looking at the craziness of all the other universities because that's all that shows up on the radar.
Various filterings going on. I mean, Glenn Reynolds of Instapundit makes a big deal of this.
Yes.
You know, Notes on the Education Apocalypse, as I think he calls it.
Yes.
It's possibly he's got it wrong, but he's very bright. As Glenn Reynolds is usually
gets it. He certainly runs a good blog.
Yeah. We seem to be straying away from the topic of Trump. Do we have anything else to say?
It's nagging me. There is one other thing I want to say.
If it comes, we can turn on the recorder again
and
then say it.
Okay.
But that's it. Okay, thanks.